Gorgeous Lives, a series on RadioGorgeous.com. Virginia Nicholson is a historian of women in the 20th century. She delves into each decade, telling the stories of unheard women. Her first book, Singled Out, told the stories of women who became spinsters after the First World War. Her second book, Millions Like Us, we heard about the stoical women of World War II, but today we're talking about perfect wives in ideal homes, the story of women of the 1950s. Could a woman have a career apart from a nurse or a teacher in the 1950s?
Yes, she could. So let's not be under any illusion. She could. It wasn't impossible. It wasn't banned. There was no out-and-out bar. A woman could get an education. It's just that it wasn't easy. It wasn't straightforward. There weren't the kind of absolute, you know, kind of prohibitions attached to education that there had been 50, 60, 70 years earlier.
Could a woman get a degree at this point?
Yes, a woman could get a degree from most universities, but not all. I'm trying to remember when Cambridge finally allowed them, 1948 or something, really late. It's pretty shocking. But yes, she could get a degree. And yes, she could take her qualifications and go out there and do her best. But I found a fascinating avenue of research on that front, which was that Judith Hubbock, who was a graduate, wrote a book called Wives Who Went to College. A fascinating resource. She'd done a huge amount of research about women like herself who had been to university. She had got a top degree. They then got married in the normal course of events, had children in the normal course of events, suddenly found that they actually couldn't allow themselves to go out to work because there was the necessity to stay at home with the children. So time then passed, 2, 3, maybe 4 children down the line. They're going insane. They're going absolutely crazy, thinking, what happened to that wonderful degree I did in Latin and Greek? Or human sciences, or English poetry, or Spanish literature, or all that wonderful stuff I learned about politics. It's all mouldering and wasted. And so Shira did this survey about her contemporaries. And really, it's Betty Friedan's Feminine Mystique 7 years before. It was done here in the UK before Betty Friedan wrote that book in 1963.
And tell me about the outcomes then.
Well, the outcomes were really that her respondents to her survey, by and large, were feeling extremely unhappy, frustrated and wasted. And there was a lot of controversy about it in the press at the time. Women wrote to the papers after they'd read her book and said, you know, we've really got to take a long, hard look about the opportunities that we offer women. Men wrote in and said, well, this absolutely proves the point that they shouldn't have gone to university in the first place because their degrees are wasted, because there was an understanding that women in the home was the status quo. So what were they doing trying to get out there and get themselves educated to begin with? Extraordinary.
So it was still the same thing as I've read your other books in the 20s and 30s. When you got married, you were meant to give up work.
Pretty much. It didn't actually happen that way. A lot of women, in fact, increasing numbers, did go back to work after they were married. And if they could cope with the childcare issues, which wasn't straightforward, but, you know, with a bit of kind of jiggling could be done. You could get an au pair or you could bring in auntie or granny or whatever it might be. But the overall tendency was to go for very low status jobs. Low pay, low status. Women earned an average of 59% of what men earned at that time. So they really tended to go to work for what was known as pin money. In other words, for little luxuries, little extras for the children, holidays, put towards saving for a TV or a bigger and better pram for the next baby or whatever it might be. And they juggled their hours. If you were a nurse, you could probably fit it in. I've got a story in the book about a nurse who got it down to a very fine art. She'd rush home just in time to pick up the kids, get the meal ready, dash out for her night shift as soon as her husband got home.
Now, I wonder if these women, even if they were doing pin money jobs, do you think they were happier from researching them?
I think they felt that they gave their life more meaning, that it, on the whole, I mean, it's hard to generalise, not all of them did.
Because maybe they had to work for money, because there's a difference between working for pleasure and working for money.
Very much so, very much so. And, I mean, one can't generalise. Some of them absolutely had to. There's a story in the book of a single mother who called Lorna Arnold, who was a woman who fascinated me because she had been one of our first diplomats and had worked at the United Nations in America and seen NATO put in place and done all sorts of amazing things with the Foreign Office. She then got married and her husband, 4 or 5 years down the line, left her because he was gay. He didn't obviously have a full understanding of his sexuality, but it dawned on him that he sort of just had to get out of this dysfunctional marriage. So he left her and she was left with two small children who she parked with her aunt. And then with this wonderful degree, this amazing experience, she went out and got herself a job in a biscuit factory.
She got a job in a biscuit factory?
She got a job because it was just down the road and it was available to her. And she was the kind, there was practically full employment. If you didn't like a job, a factory job, you could do it for a couple of weeks and then ditch it and go and get another job.
God, the opposite of now, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Absolute opposite.
But they were low status, boring, tedious, monotonous production line jobs. And she did that and she was very humble. You know, she had a very top degree from London University and she just decided for herself that she had to put food on the table for her kids and that's what she did.
Gorgeous Lives, a series on RadioGorgeous.com. Now, class was still a big divide in the 50s. Girls dreamt of leaving home and meeting a rich man, but this became possible for a few through the invention of beauty pageants. Can you tell us about them?
I got very, very fascinated by this. I do a lot of reading before I actually start doing interviews in order to get a picture of, from the research, from the reading, of what kind of people I then want to interview. And it became increasingly apparent that I had to get a beauty queen to tell me her story. And so, you know, I did a bit of research. I did a lot of asking around and I eventually tracked down a woman who had been Miss Great Britain 1957. And she was brilliant. She told me her story. She sent me her unpublished memoir of the time. And for her, I'm not sure I was entirely prepared for the story she did eventually tell me, which was really that becoming a beauty queen wasn't about approval of you as a perfect woman. It was about an escape route from a really dreadful lower class and oppressive background. And her parents were very tricky. Her mother was very unpleasant to her. She had a stepfather. It just wasn't working. She was desperate to get out, desperate to escape. And she was lucky enough to be pretty enough to qualify for these things. And she realised that if she really, really worked at it, and if she operated in a thoroughly professional manner, she could get out there and make money. And it's exactly what she did. And she was intelligent. She spotted how to work the system to her advantage. And working the system meant appearing absolutely at your best all times. So when you went in for the competitions at Morecambe Bay, Butlins, you showed up at breakfast looking perfect. You didn't show up in your rollers with your fingers not manicured. You looked perfect at all times. You behaved to the potential judges at all times in the correct way. You just worked on your appearance all the time. So the ultimate result for her was being crowned.
Was it a happy story? Was she still in a good place when you met her?
I didn't actually meet her. We did the interview down the phone from Marbella, which is where she now lives.
That's a sign that she's doing okay. So,
yes, it was a very happy story, ultimately. Yeah. She had a bumpy ride, though. Once you get Miss UK... She had hoped, obviously, to go ahead and get Miss World, but she ran up against the nefarious Eric Morley, who...
didn't he invent?
He invented Miss World, absolutely. He started it. It was part of the Festival of Britain 1951. And the whole thing took off. And he was one of the judges when Leela Williams won Miss Great Britain 57. So he said, you know, you stand every chance of winning Miss UK and winning Miss World. It was very much in his interests to have a Miss UK winning Miss World, because obviously it was a UK-based competition, and up till then they hadn't had one. So he got her to understand in no uncertain terms that if she, as he put it, played her cards right, she would succeed. And unfortunately for him, fortunately for her, she didn't. She decided not to play his game, and she made a run for it, basically.
Gosh, so fascinating again.
But happily, she then, you know, a couple of years down the line, I won't go into all the details, it's all in the book.
Yeah.
A couple of years down the line, she made it onto television, which was her dream, and she became the first presenter of Blue Peter.
Wow, I love her.
And she also worked on a pop music programme, and while on that pop music programme, she met her husband, who was called Fred Mudd and was one of the lead singers of the Mudlarks. And they had a brilliant, happy marriage.
So it was necessity. So these women weren't... But didn't even have time to think about this is sexist, this is... You know, that wasn't even their consciousness.
Didn't cross her mind at all.
This is a job and I'm going to be really good
at it. She was professional. Yeah. She was a professional beauty queen.
Thanks, Virginia. Perfect Wives in Ideal Homes is published by Penguin Viking. In programme 3, we'll be looking at holiday camps, Butlins, Red Coasts, fashion, the new look, dressmaking, teenagers, teddy girls, Portobello Road and the Housebound Wives Register. See you next time. This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2015.
Shorts, and he don't even care for clothes. He cares for me. My baby don't care for cars and
my weekday fix, darling. It has to be Radio Gorgeous.